Welcome to Living the Dream Outdoors, the official podcast of Living the Dream Outdoor Properties. We live by the motto, it's not just land, it's a lifestyle. And we live the outdoor lifestyle every day. Whether you're a landowner or dreaming of joining the ranks of those closest to the earth, we're your brothers and sisters of the outdoors. We hunt, we fish, we're stewards of the land. And our Living the Dream team will show you the way to enjoying the land and all the outdoor pursuits it has to offer. Here's your host, Bill Cooper.
Welcome to Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Cooper, and this evening I'm over at the White Buffalo Fly Shop in Rolla, Missouri. It's a Thursday evening. Little crowd in here. Some fly tying going on. I've got a couple of guests here going to help me out with a podcast. Got a longtime fly fisherman friend, Sam Potter. Sam, good to have you on the show again.
All right. It's good to be here.
Hey, Sam's one of those guys, you know, always try to twist his arm a little bit, get a little fishing information out of him. He's one of those older fellows like me, and he's pretty tight-lipped, you know. But, hey, he's a great fly tire, great teacher. And before the show's over, we'll have some good information out of him. Also got Todd Sparks. Todd, where do you hail from?
I'm from St. James now.
Are you?
I joined the Ribidoos 15 years ago or so, trying to learn how to fly fish better. I mostly followed him around and watched him learn.
Well, if you follow Sam around, you're following a good person around. He's been fly fishing for how many decades, Sam?
Six.
Been fly fishing for six decades. I'm right there with you. I was 10 years old and I got my first fly rod. How about you, Sam?
I was 17.
17. Wow. I don't know how you got so far ahead of me then. He's probably a little more dedicated than me. I'm kind of a jack of all trades. I love anything in the outdoors. Well, guys here at the White Buffalo Fly Shop, you know, these guys are celebrating their first birthday. They've been around for a while. Sam, now you've been around the fly fishing world for a long time, and I know you've been a guide for how many years as well?
25.
25 years as a guide. You know, you got to learn something in that period of time, particularly dealing with people. And, of course, if you're guiding, there's a little bit of pressure involved there sometimes, because people do like to pay, you know, catch fish, especially when they're paying. Isn't that correct, Sam?
It depends. You know, there's some people that just enjoy getting out, you know. And I actually had clients that their wife told them they had to have somebody with them, you know, when they got older. So,
oh, yeah.
You know, so, and you know, just being out, and if they catch a fish, that's great. If they catch a few fish, that's even better. But, yes, most people expect to catch fish.
Oh, they really do. But White Buffalo Fly Shop here have been in existence for a year. Dan Wynn and some other folks helped him out. And looks like they've been fairly successful. I know all the local fly fishermen have tried to support them as well as they can, tell everybody they can about it. And they're one of my sponsors of the podcast, Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast. Appreciate having those guys on, because fly fishing is near dear my heart, and I don't claim to be anything like some of these people that I see here tonight. You know, Sam's got a lot of expertise. I'm sure, Todd, you look old enough that you've probably been around fly fishing for a while yourself.
I didn't start until my early 30s, so I kind of regretted not picking a fly rod up earlier.
So you've only been at it 5 years, and you're probably about 35?
48.
Well, you've got some years under your belt. And as a beginning fly fisherman back then, how was it? Did you ever learn everything on your own, or do you have people to mentor you, or how did it work?
My very first time out, I took my 5-weight little piney, and I said I wasn't going to go home until I caught something. And I finally found a long ear that was the dumbest fish in the little piney, and then ended up going home and putting some ice on my shoulder and taking some ibuprofen. So I kind of started trying to seek out people who would know a bit more than me. And yeah, that's how I ended up hiring Sam to take us on a trip for Father's Day. I think it was Father's Day, a trip for my dad.
Yes, down to we went to the Current.
Yeah.
Yeah, Current's a good place to go.
And he introduced me to the Ribidoos. I joined up and, you know, can learn by just watching people more experienced than you is the best way to do it.
Absolutely, but a great thing about joining a club like this, you are coming in with people who have a great deal of experience. So obviously, somebody that establishes a club, they got a great deal of interest in the sport. And this evening, it's so interesting to sit here and watch. We've got some people that's, I think I'm probably older than you, but people, you know, I'm pushing 80. And then we got a couple of boys here look like they might be, what, 13, 14 years old maybe? And it's good to see such a mixture. And these guys, these young men, if they stick with it, boy, are they ever going to have an advantage on a lot of people that are, you know, flailing the water with their fly lines and all that sort of thing. But, Sam, you've been, like I said, been around for a long time, been around the fly fishing clubs. You've probably watched a lot of fly fishing stores come and go. It's kind of a tough business to get into. What makes a successful fly shop?
Well, I think Dan wanted to make it a personable shop. You know, people come in, sit around and talk. He's very friendly, open about whatever you want to work with. Or he repairs rods, recommends equipment, you know, and materials for tying flies. It's just a nice home.
Yeah.
It feels like you just feel comfortable when you come in here.
Sure, you walk right in here and you feel like you've known them forever.
You feel like you've been in home. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
He does a great job. Billy's helping him. Does a great job. Yeah.
They really do. And yeah. One of the things that you mentioned is personality. You know, if you're going to deal with the public. You expect everybody who walks through that front door is going to be a friendly type, particularly if they're a fly fisherman, you know. But that may not always be the case. I kind of chuckled tonight. You guys, Billy was teaching people to tie a basic fly here. And what was the name of it, Todd? Test time.
Oh.
Grumpy Humpy, wasn't it?
Grumpy Frumpy.
Okay. I could kind of identify with that, I think. Some of us, as we get a little older, you know, but yeah, at least my wife tells me this, you know, I get
before 9 a.m.
Good description, but yeah, some of us get a little grouchy once in a while, but fly fishing, I started when I was 10 years old, and I was reading Outdoor Life, you know. I grew up in Mississippi County, Missouri, way down in the Boot Hill. And I was always fishing muddy waters, you know. But I had, the time I was 8 years old, I was buying my own subscription to Outdoor Life magazine. That's the first place I ever saw a fly rod and fly fishing. But they were fishing all over the world, you know. But I did see some guys that were fishing for bass. And we had a bayou, you know, that's a southern term. It's like a river that ran right through our farm, came directly out of the Mississippi River. And you guys are going to think I'm lying, but I was catching 7 or 8 pound largemouth on a, I don't know what weight that thing was. It was like a pool cube, a big heavy bass rod and great big poppers. And just had a ball catching bass, bluegill, gar, you know, big gar, whatever, on that fly rod. But from there, what really inspired me, I had a uncle over in Illinois who worked for Monsanto Chemical back at the time. He wore a suit and tie all the time, so as a kid I assumed he was really important, you know. But he fished at Montauk a lot. And I remember the first time he ever described seeing these beautifully colored fish in clear water. You could see the fish. I'd never seen anything like that. You know, I thought maybe he was making this stuff up. But he's the one that really got me turned on to fishing for trout, and I never dreamed I'd wind up in trout country after I got out of graduate school and military, after I wound up as superintendent of Merrimack Spring Park. And so I had kind of a rough introduction to fly fishing. I certainly didn't have anything like these folks have here. And boy, I'm still not a good fly tire. In fact, I'd be embarrassed to tie in front of these guys. I hide in the closet and tie my flies in the wintertime, you know. But I do catch fish on them, Sam. Yeah. So, all right, you guys are experienced fly fishermen, and I know you're just, you know, full of knowledge. We could probably sit here for days, probably write a book off of what you guys had to say. But there'll be people listening to this podcast. Some of them will be very experienced fly fishermen. Some of them will be novices. Some will have thought about fly fishing for a long, long time. Now, looking way back in both of your lives, when you first started fly fishing, was it intimidating?
Definitely. It seems like that both from the technical aspect and there's like, even if it's not true, there's like a presumed culture around it.
Yeah, there really is. What about you, Sam? Was it intimidating for you when you started?
I don't know if it was intimidating. I had to work at it. My dad took the rod out and said, do it like this, handed me the rod, and went up on the porch. So I tried to do like that,
yeah.
And then he'd come down, and, you know, in about 15, 20 minutes, he'd come, no, do it like this. And then he'd hand me the rod and go back up on the porch. So it's pretty much just kind of, you know.
Worked through it.
Well, I wouldn't say he was a good tutor. But eventually got it. I figured it out.
But you had somebody, at least kind of heading you in the right direction. I'm figuring all this stuff by myself. I can't tell you how many hooks I pulled out of my ears, you know, back of my head, all that sort of thing. But there was a process that we went through. But as I got older and reading, you know, and I started seeing videos and all this kind of stuff, yeah, it was a bit intimidating. And I think that actually holds some people back. Did it turn out as bad as you thought it was going to be, Todd?
You don't have to make it complicated.
Good point. Absolutely. Well, I was just, a couple, 3 weeks ago, I was batching. My wife was out west for about 3 weeks. She'd never been out west. She went on a church missions trip but stayed another 2 weeks or something. She kind of tried to get me to go, but I said, you know, you'd have a lot better time going by yourself because every creek, stream, river, I saw, I'm going to stop and fish. So she got to do her own itinerary, you know. But intimidating, yeah, and some aspects of it are still a little bit intimidating for me because I have had the opportunity to fish in different parts of the world, and usually with great guides, you know, Alaska. I spent a lot of time in the Yucatan, that sort of thing. And you know, Sam, here in the Ozarks, how far is the average cast with a fly rod?
Average cast just to catch fish?
Yeah.
Oh, 20, 30 feet at the most.
Okay. You get down to Yucatan, that's not even a good start, you know. And I remember Captain Encolada teaching me how to get that cast out there a little bit further. Now, you're looking at guys, you know, casting 120 feet pretty easily. Of course, they got top-grade equipment. They've been at it for a long time. But he really did improve my cast. Of course, I don't have to worry about it. I never did make 120 feet, Sam. Don't think I'm bragging because I'm not. But I never could duplicate what Captain Encolada did. But I think one of the most important things you can do if you're getting into fly fishing and you're getting serious about it is what, Sam, sitting in your chair? What's one of the best things you can do for yourself if you're getting serious about fly fishing?
And get somebody to help you out.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And I tell people, you know, whether it's bass fishing, crappie fishing, whatever,
yeah,
if you want to cut light years off of the learning curve, hire a guide.
Yeah.
Hire a guide. It's money well spent. And I've seen this happen so many times, particularly, you know, all the bass fishing lakes.
Hire a good guide.
Yeah, hire a good guide.
Hire a good guide.
Hire a good guide. Exactly.
There's a difference.
Tactics are just as important as the mechanics.
Absolutely.
I would say if you're gonna get a guide, it would be a good idea if you could talk to other people who have hired that guide before, get some references. Especially if you're going out west. In this area, I think you got some good quality people, you know, that help you, that are more sincere. But you can get guides that just let you do whatever you want, as long as they just want to push the paddles and the, you know, the oars a little bit and
right,
let you do your own thing. So,
well, I assume you have a lot more guides out west than you do in the Missouri Ozarks.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
yeah. There's a lot more.
Yeah, a lot more water to fish. Big space out there, for sure. But the guides I've dealt with here in the Ozarks, fortunately, have all been very good. But, you know, they kind of weed yourselves out. You've been at it a long time, and I'm sure you've seen dozens and dozens of guides, Sam, come and go. You know, because guiding is I was never, ever tempted to guide. I've offered a lot of jobs to guide in turkey hunting. It's a tough job.
It can be a long day. People think that when you're guiding, you just take your client out and then you're out with them for a few hours. But there's prep time getting ready. You have to clean up things afterwards. You have to get a meal ready, a lunch, for everybody. There's a lot more to it than people realize. You end up putting in 12-hour day.
Oh, yeah. Easily, I'd say. And then I think it could be stressful because people are so different. And one of the things you've got to do, talking to somebody over the phone and getting in a drift boat with them are two entirely different things. Because I'm sure as a guide, you've got to start assessing that person. Personality, ability,
yes.
Experience, all that in a short period of time and try to put, right there in the boat, put a program together that's going to work for them.
Right. And if you have two people in the boat at the same time, you're constantly adjusting. If their skill levels are completely different, you're constantly adjusting the boat as you're drifting to accommodate each of the casters. Because you don't want to get too close, get on top of the fish, and maybe the guy in the back can throw it 60, 70 feet and accurately, and then one in the front can throw it 20 feet. You're trying to accommodate, both of the clients. So there's a lot more to it than people realize.
Oh, absolutely. And Todd, he just went through a whole list of things of why I do not want to be a guide. I'd rather be in a boat with Sam or some of these other guys, And I got to say, particularly in the fly fishing world, and the guys, I've never had a bad experience with a guide. Never have. Maybe I've just been fortunate. And now, I did have an incident down in Cancun, Mexico, with a guy. Looked him up. I just want to go out and fly fish for tarpon for a few hours. So I just start looking for people, and I find this guy, of course, I'm always wheeling and dealing. I'll do podcasts with them, write articles about them, whatever. So I'm trying to trade that off for a trip, mm-hmm. and get a hold of this guy. And as soon as I said I was an outdoor rider, he says, "I hate outdoor riders." Which wasn't a good start, And that's another thing, You can talk about the quality of guides. It's the same thing with outdoor riders. I've heard all kinds of horror stories about. I heard one out of Real Foot Lake one time. A resort over there gave an outdoor rider a duck blind for the whole season for one story. And the story never happened.
That's
what had happened to this guide in Cancun. And I'm going, how do you go about softening a situation like that? Well, I said, man, don't discredit ever outdoor rider because you had one sour grape, mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. same thing. Mm-hmm. Check references. Mm-hmm. Look, see if they belong to any of the professional riders associations. You can look these days real easy and look up the articles they've written. So he finally agreed to take me, and this guy Sam was just like an army drill sergeant boy. And he said, "Well, you may not like my program, but usually when people do a 5-day trip with me, they spend the first 2 days on a dock learning my fly fishing technique." I said, "Man, I got 6 hours at the most."
My technique.
Oh, yeah. But we wound up spending parts of 3 or 4 days together, and before it was over, he wanted me to write a book about his techniques. We really wound up hitting it off, and it worked out very well. But I was glad that happened. But fortunately, I have worked, now about 15 years part-time down in the Yucatan. Worked 3 years for the Campeche State Tourism Commission. They called me a tourism consultant, and all I did was run outdoor rider trips. I'd take other riders down. They paid all the expenses. And when that job ended, I worked for a couple different outfitters. And it's been one of the coolest things I ever fell into, because I've got tarpon fish quite a bit. And, boy, that's just been a dream come true. But you know what? I still wouldn't trade it for the Missouri Ozarks. We got a lot that we can do here. Well, guys, I'm going to put you on the spot just a little bit and ask you, if you had to give a beginning fly fisher one tip, Sam, to improve his program, what would it be?
One tip.
Yeah, just one.
Fisher, one tip.
That's a tough one.
Yeah, it is.
I'll let him answer first, Todd. You'll have a few seconds to think.
Okay. try not to horse it.
There you go. Hey, I was teaching
let
that.
Let the rod do the work.
I was teaching that just last week. I had a friend. I didn't finish my story a while ago. My wife was gone for a few weeks, and I invited a friend from around Kansas City to come stay for a week. He just retired. He wants to learn to fly fish. He's 65 years old or so. And boy, I hope he don't listen to this podcast, but I would rather try to teach a teenager, you know. Because old guys are really set in their ways. And Sam, you would have loved watching it. I got him started casting a little bit, that short roll cast, you know, and trying to teach him about the power of the rod and load that rod. And we were together for a week, and the guy's still piling his line up pretty good because he's just not getting that 10 to the timing correct. The hardest thing is for people to realize when they're doing that backstroke, they got to stop at that 10.
To wait.
And how far do you count, Sam? How far do you count on that back cast when you stop to allow that rod to load?
I don't count at all.
He probably don't have to. He's done it 10 million times.
No, it's feel.
Yeah.
Just a feel.
Yep. But anyway, at least a couple of seconds there probably to let that rod load good, come back. That's the hardest principle, I think, for people to understand and accept when it comes to beginning fly fishermen.
I think having what I try to get them to do is watch the line when they go back, and when the line gets straight, to come forward. Just let it load. Eventually, they'll get a feel for it.
Exactly. It's kind of like learning to ride a bicycle.
Yeah, it is, until you introduce a fish, and then they just forget all about it.
Fish with a heavy fly rod, and there's enough weight to feel that.
Oh, really? Yeah. Good point.
Translate it down to the lighter stuff.
Well, I'm not letting you get off that easy, though, Todd. What's one good tip that you would give a beginning fly fisherman?
If you have a bad cast, just let it fish. Don't rip it out of the water. You might spook everything.
Good point.
If you're disappointed, just let it fish anyway.
Hey, I'm gonna work that into my notes. Yeah, I didn't think about that.
Just leave it on the water.
Yep, good point. And of course, I took this guy out to a friend's lake, and he wanted to fly fish, and he managed to get some big bluegill. And he said there were little bluegill. He was from up originally Michigan somewhere where he catch a lot of 1 pound bluegill. We don't see many 1 pounders around here. That's a big bluegill. And he caught some largemouth bass. I took him one day on a Merrimack. Again, he wanted to fly fish. He wanted to catch a smallmouth. River was muddy and dropping. It was pretty tough. But he managed to catch about a 5-inch smallmouth on a fly. So, mission accomplished.
Mission accomplished.
Well, guys, man, I appreciate you being on the program with me. I wish we could sit here and talk all night, but there's some other folks here I want to talk to. But White Buffalo Fly Shop, if you're in the area, or I assume these guys do online sales. I'm sure they do. Everybody in the world does anymore. But about anything you could want in the fly fishing world, but be sure and check them out. Hey, I'm Bill Cooper. I'll be back in just a few minutes.
Our forefathers gave us a Bill of Rights. One of those is the right to step in the front door of Pond Center, where the faint sound of eagles screeching from on high a bounding purple mountain's majesty browls the walls full of glorious firearms. It's hard not to shed a patriotic tear as your red, white, and blue blood becomes fortified by the sight of true freedom. Pond Center, located at 408 Highway 72 East in Rolla, Missouri. Or give us a call at 573-426-GUNS.
Hey everyone, this is Michael Collins with Misty Mountains Guiding Service. I'm here to talk to you a little bit about what we offer. Misty Mountains is a smallmouth and trout-specific guiding service that caters to the Northern Ozarks region. My areas include the Upper Merrimack River, the Gasconade, and a few smaller creeks in the Mid-Missouri area. Whether you enjoy casting streamers to bass, drifting a dry fly, or ripping lips with spinning gear, I've got you covered. Fishing is made easy in my state-of-the-art drift boat raft. I control the boat with ease while you or yourself and a buddy do all the work at catching fish. Besides a great day on the water, I provide all needed gear, a delicious shore lunch, and as much fishing knowledge as you can carry with you on the way home. Spots for the 2024 season are going fast. Give me a call or text today to get your trip booked. My number is 573-823-9057. Find me on Facebook and Instagram at Misty Mountains Guiding Service. It's always an adventure with Misty Mountains.
This is Dan from the White Buffalo Fly Shop, your gateway to Missouri's blue ribbon trout streams and world-class smallmouth water. Whether you're headed to Mill Creek, the Kern, or the Gasconade, we've got the flies, the gear, and the local know-how to help you fish with confidence. If you're looking to sharpen your casting skills, join one of our hands-on clinics. Or if you'd like to craft your own fly rod, build it with us in one of our rod building courses. You're always welcome in our fly tying nights to swap stories, share patterns, and get the latest hatch reports. White Buffalo Fly Shop is more than just a place to gear up. It's a hub for our local community. You'll find us at 605 North Pine Street in Rolla or online at whitebuffaloflyshop.com.
Welcome to Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast. I'm Bill Cooper, and I'm over to White Buffalo Fly Shop in Rolla, Missouri. Great things going on here, and I've got the owner here with me, Dan Nguyen. Also got a special guest here, a young man by the name of James Wood. How old are you, James?
12,
man. And here he is in a fly shop. I got to hand it to you, Dan. This is just an incredible event to have right here in Rolla, Missouri, in the middle of the Missouri Ozarks. Got a bunch of fly fishermen in this evening doing some fly tying. And you know what? James, I'm almost 80 years old, and here you are 12 years old, and we're both in a fly shop together. That's pretty cool. Well, Dan, I got to hand it to you. Say congratulations, man. White Buffalo Fly Shop, you've got a year under your belt now.
Yep.
Wow. Did you think you'd see that first anniversary when you first opened the doors?
I certainly had high hopes that we would, Bill. They never say that you get into building fly shops to make $1 billion, right?
Well, I would think that would be the case because I've seen a lot of them come and go in my lifetime, right. You know. But you guys had a formula. I think that obviously you put a lot of thought and planning into this event before you ever turned that key for the first time, you know, to let people in. But I think it's worked beautifully. And I watch you guys all the time, you know, on the social media. And you make my mouth drool, you know. That wish I could be here every time the doors open because, oh boy, fly fishermen, you know, they're a different breed.
Absolutely.
And most of the people that get into it are just passionate about it. And of course, Dan, you and I have been around for a few decades and love fly fishing and both been very fortunate to stay involved. I don't know. I guess we could argue back and forth who's got the better end of it. You know, you're on the retail end of it. But that keeps you on top of things. What's new? What's happening? What's going on? Where the fish are biting? What the fish are biting on? I know you field probably 1,000 questions a week about that sort of thing. And then we've got James Wood, 12 years old, sitting here with us, who's gotten interested in fly fishing and fly tying as well. Mm-hmm. James, what first got you interested in fly fishing and fly tying?
My buddy, he goes to school with me, he said I should get into fly tying, and I love fishing in general, so I just try to expand.
Well, I'd say, hey, smart move. I wish I could have started at 12 years old. I didn't start fly fishing until I was about 10 years old, and fly tying, I'm still horrible at it. But you notice I didn't tie flies tonight. I embarrassed myself in front of everybody else. I usually hide in the closet or somewhere off by myself with my tie flies in the wintertime. But hey, they might be ugly, but they catch fish. That's kind of the important thing. So you had a buddy that got you started with the fly tying, huh? He tied. Does your buddy tie too?
He ties jigs, crappie jigs.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll tell you what, you know, I use a lot of jigs as well in my fly fish, particularly the little bitty things that I can, I like to rope cast them. And I was just quizzing Sam Potter, who's a longtime fly fisherman, been guiding for almost 30 years. Now, Sam is a highly respected fly fisherman in this part of the world. And I was asking Sam on the first half of the program, well, in the Ozarks, how far do you expect to cast? You know, well, 20, 30 feet. Most casts are pretty close. And those real light jigs, I can roll cast those, you know. Mm-hmm. And at times, man, they just work. But, you know, the romance of fly fishing is what, though? What do we like to see?
As far as what, that?
The romance, the real romance of fly fishing.
I don't, it's such an incorporative thing, man. I think from about every angle, I've met just about every type of a fly a person that's passionate about fly fishing now with the shop open, and everyone sort of gravitates to a different segment, and you have a lot of people that are really passionate about tying flies. You have other people that are just strictly fisher people, and it's just really interesting to share their experiences with them, because I know fellas that are tying flies that haven't been on the water in a year, you know, and vice versa. I know the guys that are on the water every single day and they haven't ever tied a fly, you know, and so. Just that it expands the entire spectrum, and it's just really interesting to talk to all of them and their experiences, and it's excellent to see folks and our young man's age here jumping in the fire, because we've got we had a couple of younger gentlemen tonight. Along with James, we had Fisher in the house too, and he's a regular player in the group also, and they just are extraordinary talents. I mean, they pick it up so very quickly, and their finished flies are just perfect, you know, nearly commercial. But, you know,
well, they have a great advantage over us old guys, though. These young fellas still in school, you know, they're just like a sponge. They soak up new information, and of course, these guys grew up with computers in their hands from time they could talk, probably, you know. Always said they have, oh gosh, if I could have had the advantages back when I was their age that they have today, I often wonder what life might have been like. But I can't complain. I've had a wonderful, wonderful life, and fly fishing has been a big part of it. Well, James, do you have your own fly rod yet?
Yes, sir.
Where'd you get that fly rod?
My dad's friend, Gerald.
Oh, had somebody donate you a fly rod. It didn't get any better than that. Let me tell you a story about my first fly rod. People listening to the podcast probably get tired of hearing this, but it's just such a fun story to tell. I was 10 years old and working for two old bachelor farmers down the road. I was hoeing cotton 15 hours a day for 50 cents an hour. That wasn't a very good paying job, was it? Not for this day and time, but it sure was back then.
Right.
But I worked with one old guy who, I say old, he was old to me. He was about 35 years old, lived in a shack there on the farm, the guys he worked for. Well, he up and bought an old Shakespeare heavy-duty bass rod with one of those automatic reels on it and Western Auto, and he paid $26 for it.
Yeah.
Now, this old boy was pretty bad to drink, you know, and he was a bachelor and lived in a shack by himself, and all he did was work in the cotton fields and drink beer and fish, you know. Well, he bought that on a Saturday, and by Monday, he wanted to sell that outfit to me, and boy, I wanted it badly. Now I said, how much? He said, well, $26. I said, well, man, you're nuts, that's 52 hours work, you know. I wasn't about to do that. So I had been kind of world wise a little bit, you know. My dad was kind of a horse trader and likes to swap guns and all that ham kind of stuff, so he taught me a few tactics about how to gain the upper hand when it come to getting something like that. So on Thursday morning, I got that outfit for $11. The old boy was out of beer money and getting pretty dry.
Absolutely.
I was pretty proud of myself. That's the first adult I ever hoodooed, you know. But that was my first fly fishing outfit, and there was a bayou that ran through our farm, come right out of the Mississippi River. And James, you can relate to this. You've caught some big bass, but I was catching 6, 7, 8 pound largemouth on a fly rod when I was 10 years old. Yeah, you know how long it's been since I've caught the bass that big on a fly rod?
Been a little bit, I bet.
Oh, yeah. I wish I still had a place like that to fly fish. But right here, man, I think we got a little piece of heaven right here. Rolla, Missouri, St. James, Cuba, Stillville, all this area, Salem. Mm-hmm. I know from my home, I can get to Nine River. Any idea how lucky you are to live where you live if you like fly fishing?
Yeah.
Where do you do most of your fly fishing?
Either Lions Club here in Raleigh or down by Beaver Creek.
He's got it figured out, hasn't he?
Yeah, he does.
You got lots of fishing friends and buddies?
Yes, sir.
Do you guys get together and fish together?
Just a couple times.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let me give you a little secret. You're sitting right in the middle of some very experienced fly fishermen right here. Don't be afraid to lean on these guys a little bit. I bet you $100 bill you could ask any one of these guys to take you fly fishing. And how hard would it be to tell a 12-year-old no?
Well,
I tell you, I don't know if I could do it. He'd probably show us something out there.
I'm sure he would.
Some of the pictures he's had on their phone and stuff.
I got to look at him today. He's not just a fly fisherman. He's an all-around outdoorsman, loves it all, and I love to see that in our young folks. Because, James, let me give you some figures. This may blow you off your stool there, but did you know that only 4% of Americans hunt anymore? 4%. That's 4 out of 100. It's pretty scary. Only about 16% fish. And if you cut that down to fly fishermen, wonder what the figures would be.
Not very big, my man. Less than 1%, I bet.
I would say that's probably true.
Yep.
So you're really part of a rare breed. We still complain about the streams being crowded, you know.
Yep.
But we have to promote these things. We have to encourage other people to come in because we want to see it continue. If you want to see it continue in your lifetime, you're going to have to invite some of your buddies, too. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I've been in the outdoor industry for, over 6 decades and have watched a lot of programs, different agencies trying to recruit people and bring them into hunting and fishing. A lot of programs have failed to work. Yes, Dan, who is most likely to bring somebody into hunting or fishing?
I would say, I would say it'd be about the same route that I was invited in. You know, the same way that James is, just your friends, invite your friends in, you know.
Dead on.
Mm-hmm.
I used to argue with some of the agencies that have programs. National Wild Turkey Federation was one. Mm-hmm. I was on the state board for several years, and they'd want to have an event, have 500 kids come in, let them shoot a BB gun, shoot a bow, whatever. I kept telling them, you're not going to retain anybody doing that.
Yeah.
A one-time experience doesn't cut it. James, do you think you would have kept fishing if you only got to go one time? It'd be tough, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So best people, of course, it's great if you got parents that can take you, but that's not always the case. Everybody's busy working. But maybe a cousin, an uncle, or a grandpa, you know, whoever invites you to go that first time. But what retains people, keeps people hunting and fishing, mm-hmm. is repetition.
Absolutely.
How do you learn in school? They still do the 3 hours, repeat, repeat, repeat. You hear a lot of the same information over and over in school. Yeah, that's how we learn.
Yeah.
So it's got to be the same way in the outdoor world, whether we're talking rabbit hunting, deer hunting, turkey hunting, or fly fishing. We have to repeat the process. And these guys, boy, I'm just almost envious. You've got great people here teaching the fly fishing courses. Billy Egger was teaching. What was the lady's name?
Lewis. Yeah, Louisa Runnels.
Yeah, she did a great job as teaching as well,
yeah.
Step by step. And it just intrigues me that they've got a little camera sitting right on the tying box,
mm-hmm.
projecting that up on a screen so that you can visually watch how that fly is being put together and simply duplicate it.
Mm-hmm.
Then you had several instructors walking around the floor that helping people individually if they had a problem mm-hmm. with their fly. So what was the first fly you tied tonight? Remember the name of it? It was a Grumpy something.
Yeah.
Grumpy Frumpy. Was that a difficult fly to tie, James?
It took me a little bit on the first one, but I think I got it better on the second one.
There you go.
Yep.
Yeah, a good old repetition. And plus you had some good instructors there to help you out as well, too. Well, man, I tell you, it's just great. Great fun to be able to participate in this kind of adventure, but more fun to share it with other people. And man, I commend you for being brave enough to come out and take up fly tying like this. Who did you come with tonight?
My stepdad, Isaac.
Okay, now Isaac, is he a fly fisherman?
He fly fishes sometimes.
Sometimes. Maybe you're going to have to teach him. Well, I think you're headed the right direction for sure, man. Well, Dan,
mm-hmm.
you made it through the first year.
We did that, sir.
How'd that happen?
We did that. Man, I think it's just overwhelming support from the community. I've met so many people that, A, I didn't know were fly fishers, and then also we've had a lot that have come into the fold that have really hung on. And I feel like our tying classes that we've been doing here have been really integral in keeping our community going and things like that. And they've been really supportive of the things that we've been doing here. And so we've not only been doing that, but we've been building rods in-house also, done some casting things. A lot of individual casting clinics and couples and individuals and small groups and things like that. And those have been really fun, and we've all learned a lot from those things. And so everybody casts a little bit different, and so that's taught me a lot of things. And then we just try to continue to be of service to the fly fishing community, because I think that that's sort of where we're headed in our area here. And we've just got so many people that I know that whenever I grew up in this region, that there wasn't as much outreach as what we have now and potential. And so that was sort of our goal for starting, is to give a centralized place that we can be of service in wherever arena that we're at. It's been good.
Been good, and good for the community as well, and particularly the fly fishing community. And you have fly tying lessons here, what, once a month?
Yeah, we do a steady one the first Tuesday of every month, and that happens regardless. And then there are also some smaller one-on-one things that occur in the shop, and people are always always welcome to come in the evenings and tie if they'd like to. We always have vices and benches set up, and so we just try to stay steady on it. And so we're still going to have the clinic even if we have one person sign up. So
wow,
doesn't really matter.
Well, you had a store full tonight. How many tires did you have?
I think we ended up having 12, I think, and then had only one cancellation tonight. So,
well, that's pretty darn good. Mm-hmm. Well, it's so interesting too, and I encourage people to come check this out and check it out on social media as well. But it's a great place to come to learn the basics of fly tying, and some of these people are pretty accomplished. But the cool thing is everybody helps everybody out.
Mm-hmm.
And you come in, man, you got such a great atmosphere. Of course, I've sat here all night and look at all the fly fishing gear and fly tying material and all that good stuff. But man, you have food here too for this. That's part of the cost, I guess.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What'd you have tonight?
I think we did barbecue chicken tacos. Yeah.
Wow, don't sound too bad. I didn't try any. I ate right before I walked in the door. I made a mistake, I guess.
Yeah.
Did you try the food out tonight, James? Was it decent?
It was pretty good, yeah.
Pretty good. Now, I find that a lot of people that are outdoorsmen, fly fishermen, I do a lot of this, are pretty good cooks as well. Do you cook?
Yes, sir.
Ah, what's your favorite thing to cook?
Chicken Alfredo.
He's high class.
There we go, buddy.
Well, I'm known in this part of the world as the Gravel Bar Gourmet. I wrote a column for an outdoor magazine for about a dozen years called the Gravel Bar Gourmet, and all it was about was cooking on the riverbanks, and I was doing that just last week.
That was awesome.
And then, it's so much fun. And I don't care how lousy a cook I am on any given day, out on the river, it's still good.
Yep. You get a little bit of sand in there, you're good to go.
Oh, yeah, you got my secret there. You know, everybody always asks me what my secret ingredient is. It's a pinch of sand. Just throw a little sand in it. It's going to get there anyway, you know. Hey, it's all about having a good time. They believe in that here at the White Buffalo Fly Shop. Well, Dan, tell us what your hours are here, how you operate.
We're open from Tuesday through Sunday, and we're open afternoons 3 to 6, Tuesday through Friday. And then Saturdays we're open full days from 9 until 6. And then Sundays were a little shorter day. We 11:30 to 4 on Sundays.
But you can still get in here and pick up the stuff you need. And I tell you what, there's nothing like a fly shop if you're in the Ozarks. When, you call a buddy down Current River and he tells you they're hitting such and such a pattern, you know. You got everything in your fly box but that.
Yep.
You stop by White Buffalo Fly Shop and take care of that.
Yep, absolutely.
All right.
We're always cycling our flies through the fly bins, and we sort of seasonally change them out. So we're stocking up and tying some different things and adding some poppers and all those things for summertime here. And so it's always a continuous change out. So
yeah. Well, a great part of the fun, James, you're going to find this out too as you progress through this thing, is just experimenting with different flies. I don't know, I laughed a couple summers ago. I've always still, I've fished for salmon in Alaska, tarpon in the Yucatan, and you know, all the things you can chase around this part of the world, and still if I could only fish for one thing. So much fun. I still love doing it. I still have a belly boat. I jump in a pond, paddle around, yep, find those beds, ropeate between them. And there's just something about a bluegill sucking a popper in. And those little guys fight so hard. I'm glad they don't weigh 10 pounds. You know, they break everything you had.
Yep.
But I was teaching an older gentleman, not as old as me, but a friend of mine, just last week. He'd retired and he wanted to learn to fly fish, you know. And he took him to a friend's lake that had some pretty good-sized bluegill in it. Of course, he caught one right off the bat, and you know how they do. They get that popper down in their throat.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Well, James, I have a magic tool to take care of that, and I'd be glad to sell you one for $25. It's a popsicle stick. Take that popsicle stick, just cut a little V-notch on one end of it, hold that bluegill, wrap the line around your finger, get it tight, run it down in, and you can pop those poppers out there just lickety-split.
Yeah.
You think I can get $25 out of a popsicle stick? See, I had an old gentleman when I was your age try to pull that on me. Of course, back then he wanted $5 for that popsicle stick.
Yeah.
And I was a pretty shrewd businessman, you know, at 10 or 11 years old. And I scratched my head for a second. I said, well, sir, I can buy a lot of popsicles for $5. But I still, you can check my boat. I probably got a half a dozen popsicle sticks laying around I use as a fish disgorger, you know. But,
yep. But
hey, James, man, I commend you again for getting involved here, and I hope you'll keep it up. Bring some friends with you. You had a friend invite you, and invite some of your friends, and show them pictures of those fish, you know. You don't have to tell them where your fishing spots are now, but yeah. Hey, make them jealous. Make them want to get out there, because what is it so exciting about hooking a fish?
The fight, really, and the sea where you put it.
Yeah.
Absolutely right. That's why we all go. We like to feel that tug on the line, you know.
Yeah.
And, of course, you impressed me as being much like a grandson of mine. He's about 15 now, and we were on the Gasconade River a couple of summers ago. He usually spends a couple of weeks with me. We were floating along. I was in my jet boat. We were bass fishing with spinning rods, and we drifted by a sandbank. Looked like there wouldn't have been a speck of life on that, and I caught a 17.5-inch smallmouth.
Oh, my.
I was, you know, pretty proud of it. Well, Ronnie, my grandson, he said, well, Papa, can we motor back up and float through there again? I said, there's no fish. That's probably going to fish on that bank. Well, guess what? He catches a 17.75-inch smallmouth about 10 feet from where I caught mine. He's hoorahing. We took the pictures and let the fish go. Well, on the way home, he's about to go to sleep, and he perked up all of a sudden. He said, Papa, can I ask you a question? I said, sure. He said, do I have bragging rights for today? He beat me by 1/4-inch. You know? Would you do that to a guy, James? Of course you would. Hey, that's part of the fun. Well, Dan, tell people how they can get a hold of you if they want to stop by.
Yeah.
And where you're at.
Yeah, there's lots of ways to reach us, either through social media. All of our handles are at whitebuffaloflyshop.com. And also our posted hours that we spoke about earlier, we're open Tuesday through Sunday. Direct phone number 276-393-9140, and we're located at right on 605 North Pine Street, right in downtown Rolla.
All right, well, folks, be sure and stop by and check it out. You won't regret it. All right, we're going to wrap it up here. What a great program. Once again, appreciate you guys being on with me. From Dan Wynn, James Wood, and myself, Bill Cooper, we're enjoying our outdoor dreams. We enjoy you. We encourage you to get into the outdoors and enjoy your dreams as well.
People love a good mustache. People also love a good firearm. The fine people down at Pond Center like both. They have the largest selections of firearms in the area, and with a friendly, knowledgeable staff of hombres to help you pick the gun that's right for you. You could end up riding into the sunset with a gun you love. Find them at pc72guns.com, on shelf, in store, online. Or give them a call at 573-426-GUNS. That's Pond Center. Guns welcome. Mustache appreciated.
Captain Brian Wilson runs one of the tightest bow fishing operations in the business. Stainwater Bow Fishing operates out of Jerome, Missouri, and the beautiful Missouri Ozarks. They cover most Ozark streams and lakes. You haven't lived until you've searched Ozark waters during the night with Stainwater Bow Fishing while looking for giant gar, carp, and buffalo. Captain Wilson also runs a second boat on Taneycomo Lake. Call today to book a trip with Stainwater Bow Fishing at 573-263-8016. Again, that's 573-263-8016. Be sure and shoot straight.
The Living the Dream Outdoors podcast is brought to you by Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, The Fly Rod Journals, SmokerBuilder.com, Cowtown USA, Westover Farms, Scenic Rivers Taxidermy, Stained Water Bow Fishing, Scenic Rivers Guide Service and Tours, Huzzah Valley Resort, Devil's Backbone Outfitters, J&J Charters, Kaufman Cove, Alaska, Bean Creek Game Calls, Misty Mountain Guide Service, ASO Guides and Outfitters with Ryan Walker, The Rambling Angler, and Rich's Famous Burgers.
Land ownership is the American dream. Land is the basis of all life. Our wise use of this most precious of resources ensures the survival and growth of free institutions and our American way of life. At Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, we value the traditions and freedoms that land provides us. Every day we seek the solace of a mountain sunrise over traffic jams and smog, the calming silence of a bubbling stream over the sirens of the city, and the quiet of the countryside over the hustle and bustle of the world. We hunt, we fish, we farm. We live off the land. It's our mission to help our clients live out their dreams on the land as we do. At Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, we believe that it's not just land, it's a lifestyle. Join us 5 days a week on Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast as the Living the Dream Outdoor Dream Team explores the most desired outdoor properties in the Midwest and whisks you away to incredible hunting, fishing, and outdoor recreation opportunities. Host Bill Cooper, an inductee of the National Freshwater Fishing Hall of Fame, will be joined by members of the Living the Dream Outdoors team each week as they tell tall tales, unveil tips and tactics, and rub elbows with some of the biggest names in the outdoor world. You'll also find the Living the Dream Outdoors podcast on your favorite social media platforms, including Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok.